Court will proceed to the third case of the day, Duckworth v. Ahmad and Kerira. Kilpatrick?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Counsel. My name is Joseph Kilpatrick, and I am counsel for the appellant plaintiff, Mr. Greg Duckworth. Mr. Duckworth is appealing two orders entered at the district court level, granting summary judgment to the defendant appellee doctors, Drs. Kiera and Dr. Ahmad, on their separate motions for summary judgment on Mr. Duckworth's claims for deliberate indifference to his serious medical needs. This case presents a shocking set of circumstances in which Mr. Duckworth repeatedly bled in his urine over a period of 18 months while under the care of both defendant doctors, first Dr. Ahmad, second Dr. Kiera, at two separate correctional institutions in the state of Illinois from August 1999 until January 2001. Despite Mr. Duckworth's repeated requests and attempts to have these doctors diagnose the cause of his bleeding and to treat that condition, it was not until January 2001 when an independent doctor outside of the correctional facility was finally permitted to perform a very basic diagnostic test of Mr. Duckworth, which the record indicates is a standard outpatient procedure, would take 10 to 15 minutes in a doctor's office. And at that time, it was found that Mr. Duckworth had bladder cancer. The district court, in issuing its orders, made several errors in its interpretation of the facts and application of the law applicable to this case. And each of those factual determinations and application of the law, when viewed in the light most favorable to Mr. Duckworth as the non-moving party, would clearly indicate that a reasonable jury could come to the determination that both defendants were deliberately indifferent to his medical needs. I'd like to begin by addressing a few of those concerns with Dr. Kiera, but before doing so, there are four uncontroverted material facts in the record of this case that are directly applicable to Mr. Duckworth's condition. The first is that visible blood in the urine is referred to medically as gross hematuria. It is uncontroverted that Mr. Duckworth suffered this symptom for 18 consecutive months.
But there were tests taken that did not disclose blood in the urine, right?
That is true, Your Honor. Each of the doctors performed tests called urinalyses at various points in their care. At some points, those urinalyses did not show an elevated level of blood in the urine. But the second uncontroverted fact in the record from Mr. Duckworth's own urologist with 30 years of experience in the field is that a classic bladder tumor will bleed intermediately, meaning it will start, stop, appear to have resolved, and start it again. Additionally, Mr. Duckworth reported to both defendant doctors from the very earliest days of their care for him, first to Dr. Ahmad and second Dr. Kiera, that he had visibly observed blood in his urine. Many times this court has recognized that often self-reporting can be the only indication that a patient may have that something is wrong.
But isn't that really part of poor diagnosis on behalf of the doctor?
There are additional factors. There are two additional factors that suggest that this symptom should be indicative of an immediate and most obvious danger to the patient's health. The third uncontroverted fact that I was going to address was that blood in the urine, gross hematuria, is an indicative symptom of cancer within the urinary tract. It's uncontroverted in the record. The second problem.
He did have kidney stones, didn't he?
About 14 to 16 months into his treatment, when he was under the care of Dr. Kiera, he received a second IVP procedure. The IVP procedure is to scan the upper part of the urinary tract. It's called an intravenous pyelogram. The cystoscopy that I referred to earlier, the scope, is for the lower part, the bladder. That second IVP procedure, the first time that there had been an indication that there may be blockage, appeared to reveal a kidney stone, a small one. Ultimately, when Mr. Duckworth was referred at the very end of his care while he continued to bleed and asking, we referred to the outside urologist. For the first time, that urologist returned the response saying, it may be that there is a kidney stone. However, we must do a complete workup. And at that time, it was determined that he had bladder cancer. The subsequent records don't indicate that the kidney stones were ever verified that they were there. It appeared on one test. It had been later determined that a full workup should be performed. And that leads me to the fourth and controverted fact. The full workup to determine whether gross hematuria is caused by a cancer within the urinary tract is the combination of those two tests. Mr. Duckworth's urologist, explained in his affidavits and his report that without doing both tests, you cannot get a complete picture of the urinary tract. They're designed to do different things. The IVP is designed to look for the top part of the tract. The cystoscopy, the simple flexible tube that can be inserted in an outpatient setting in 10 to 15 minutes, is designed to visually inspect the lower part of the tract. It's impossible to get the complete picture without them.
The first doctor here, first institution, was that Ahmed?
Yes, Dr. First, Ahmed. Yes.
Okay. I thought he made a referral to a urologist. Soon, I know he did. Mr. Duckworth did not see a urologist, but he did make a referral to a urologist, and I think assumed, wrong, tell me, but assumed that when he saw him subsequently that, yes, in fact, he had seen a urologist.
Yes, Your Honor, the record does indicate that Dr. Ahmad referred Mr. Duckworth in August of 1999, and that was the first month of treatment at issue in this case, referred Mr. Duckworth to an outside clinic called the Christie Clinic and assumed he was being treated by a urologist. Ultimately, Dr. Ahmad continued to refer or continued to run urinalysis procedures at least once in the month of October of 1999 and noticed again that Mr. Duckworth was bleeding as he had originally reported.
Just stay on the urologist thing, though. If he does that, makes that referral on a medical malpractice case, difference. Does make a referral to a urologist, assumes he had seen a urologist, and Duckworth didn't tell him, I never saw a urologist, did he?
Your Honor, he did, although it was months later. After the turn of the year in January 2000, the record shows.
In the next month, he was gone from Ahmed's care, though, wasn't he?
No, Your Honor, that's actually where there's a disagreement in the record, and construing the evidence in favor of Mr. Duckworth as it should be, Dr. Ahmad's contractual employer, for lack of a better term, Wexford Health Services, submitted a response through discovery in this case that Dr. Ahmad remained at the Champaign County Jail, the first facility, all the way until April of 2001. Mr. Duckworth left at the end of May, beginning of June in 2000. Dr. Ahmad was there the entire time that Mr. Duckworth was there. In January of 2000, presuming that the facts would be construed that Dr. Ahmad learned for the first time that Mr. Duckworth had not been treated by a urologist, it's undenied by his own deposition testimony that Dr. Ahmad assumed his care. He assumed care and did not refer Mr. Duckworth again for treatment by a urologist at Christie Clinic or anywhere else.
Position and that everything that happened before that was not deliberate and
The district court determined that it was indeterminable based upon the complaint forms that Mr. Duckworth had advised Dr. Ahmad of his complaints, that he had not been seen as continuing to bleed, even conceding that Dr. Ahmad did not know until the turn of the year that he was not being treated. There still was a period of 5 months during which Dr. Ahmad repeatedly ran the same tests, already knowing that Mr. Duckworth had 5 to 6 months of prior bleeding, never referred him again to an outside urologist. And there are several indications.
But that's treatment, or at least a diagnosis that may be malpractice, but it's not indifferent to his condition, is it?
Your Honor, there are several indications in the record that suggest it was, in fact, indifferent. The first of those is that in the fall of 1999, the uncontroverted evidence in the record shows that Dr. Ahmad asked Mr. Duckworth, when are you going to leave Champaign County Jail? And went on to say, you'll get your problem taken care of when you get to where you're going. Following up, in February of 2000, after Dr. Ahmad had assumed care, documents in the record in response to a complaint letter that Mr. Duckworth wrote, nurses under the direction of Dr. Ahmad said, Dr. Ahmad's already talked to Mr. Duckworth several times. We're not going to do anything further. In March, in a very note written by Dr. Ahmad in the record, says no indication for further follow-up. And then finally, at the end of the March, after Mr. Duckworth has repeatedly claimed, I'm bleeding, I'm continuing to bleed, the urinalyses show that I'm bleeding, please treat me, please help me. When Dr. Ahmad finally ordered only one part of the test, he told Mr. Duckworth, if this comes back clear, I don't want to hear from you again. He clearly shows over this pattern of treatment that he disregarded the severe risk. He didn't order the necessary tests. And once that test came back, despite remaining at the prison, being responsible for Mr. Duckworth's care, for the next over 2 months, he never once again ordered any treatment or treated Mr. Duckworth. And ultimately, he let Mr. Duckworth get to where he was going. Essentially passed the buck, which is where Dr. Caiera comes in. Because in January and June of 2000, Dr. Caiera assumed care for Mr. Duckworth at the Centralia Prison Facility. In the very first meeting with Dr. Caiera in June of 2000, Mr. Duckworth told Dr. Caiera, that he had had 10 prior months of bleeding, that he had been treated. He'd been given antibiotics. They didn't work. He'd been given urinalyses. They'd shown that he confirmed that he was bleeding, and he had not had any treatment for that care. The first consideration in the district court's ruling in this case, in summary judgment, was that Dr. Caiera was not subjectively aware of the severity of Mr. Duckworth's medical condition. However, there are several indications that show true problems with this interpretation. The first is the court premised its ruling on the fact that there was no prior diagnosis of a cancer for Mr. Duckworth, so therefore Dr. Caiera could not have been aware. However, both Dr. Caiera and Dr. Ahmad in their briefs on appeal and at the lower court have conceded the objective severity of seeing blood in the urine. Even the most uneducated layperson would recognize the need to have immediate treatment. And as cited in the briefs, other courts have recognized that too.
Well, I agree that that's certainly true. But on the other hand, there are several tests that show with no blood in the urine, right?
And Your Honor, that is correct. There are several urinalyses that show that there were not heightened levels of blood. However, that in combination with the evidence in the record showing that bladder tumors cannot be expected to bleed consistently, in fact, you would anticipate that they may appear to resolve and then start again, is consistent with Mr. Duckworth's claim and the evidence in this case, that he continually bled over a period of time, reported that to the doctors.
But again, doesn't that show poor diagnosis on the part of the doctor?
No, Your Honor, I would posit to the court that it does not. Because in conjunction with Mr. Duckworth telling Dr. Caiera in his first visit that I've been bleeding, he told him something else that is a critical distinction that I posit has been missed in the district court's interpretation. And that is that he advised Dr. Caiera that he had a family history of cancer. Immediately upon telling him that, in the very same meeting, before running any diagnostic tests, before doing any determination, Dr. Caiera immediately assured him that he did not have cancer. The district court, in its opinion, looks back to this court's determination in the Greeno versus Daly case to say that there were determinations in that case, that there was an ulcer, it was diagnosed, and then at the end of the day, that's enough to suggest that there was subjective knowledge. And in this case, there was no diagnosis of a cancer. That's true, but the district court's opinion misinterpreted both the facts and misapplied that application because in the Greeno case, the only report of an ulcer was an indication in the notes we should rule this out. There never was a definitive diagnosis of an ulcer in that case until the very end of the case when the proper scope test was performed. In fact, the conduct of the physicians in Greeno was perhaps even less telling than the conduct of Dr. Caiera in this case, because in Greeno there was just notations to rule out the notation of an ulcer. In this case, beyond that, Dr. Caiera ruled out that diagnosis immediately without running any diagnostic tests, despite the uncontroverted medical facts showing that symptom is a key indicating factor of cancer. I see that I've entered.
Is he still in custody?
Yes, Your Honor, he's still in custody.
Had multiple surgeries. When was the last?
I believe, Your Honor, it was 2004 to 2005, but he has had several surgeries since then.
Is he cancer-free now?
At this point, it appears that he may be cancer-free. It appears to be the last record.
I was just going to say, he wasn't a pretrial detainee in these incarcerations, was he? I mean, this is after conviction.
Your Honor, I apologize that I am not completely sure. He was definitely stationed at the Champaign County Jail while certain of his convictions were being interpreted or being decided upon.
That's what I thought. They said jail facilities, which would typically be pre-trial. But
Right. It is my understanding, Your Honor, and I apologize. I would have to defer the records. My understanding that he had already been sentenced, but it was waiting until he could be transferred to an appropriate state facility, which
being
is
held. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kilpatrick. Mr. Unrath?
Good morning. My name is Mr. Unrath, Craig Unrath. I represent Dr. Kaira, the second physician to see this patient. At the outset, I'd just like to clear up one point. Counsel repeatedly in his brief and oral argument has stated that painless hematuria, painless bleeding through the urine, is a sign of cancer. That's incorrect. Actually, painless hematuria can be a sign of many different things. It can be represent a very severe condition like cancer. It can represent many others. There's another point, fact that is conspicuously absent from their entire brief. When we talk about what it is these doctors found, I'd like to start with the very first time that Dr. Kaira saw the patient. Saw him on June 12, 2000. Complained of blood in the urine. Dr. Kaira did not have any medical records to support that. They were still being sent over. He ordered them after that examination, but he had nothing to work with other than the patient's history. Took a urinalysis and a blood test, and he found in the urinalysis bacteria. Bacteria suggesting a urinary tract infection, something that is fairly common and something that causes bleeding in the urine. He took a blood test, found elevated white blood cells. Anyone who's watched a medical TV show knows that elevated white blood cells indicate infection. He put him on antibiotics, ordered the medical records to find out what his past history was, and said, come back if you have any more problems. Came back almost exactly 1 month later, and he said, I'm still having some bleeding in my urine. He prescribed another set of antibiotics for this problem. On August 14th, the third visit, took another urinalysis. There was no blood in the urine, but there was significant amounts of bacteria, levels of 10 to 25,000 organisms per milliliter, strongly suggesting a urinary tract infection. As a matter of fact, it would be described as clear evidence of a urinary tract infection. And once again, elevated white blood cell counts. Fourth exam. He's still waiting for the medical records. He has to reorder those medical records from Champaign because they still haven't arrived. Patient's complaining of stomach pain and blood in his urine. Dr. Kaira ordered a radiological study, which revealed kidney stones. Once again, we have medical evidence that fits in with his treatment plan because these kidney stones can cause a urinary tract infection and can cause intermittent bleeding. It all fits. The blood tests also showed an elevated white blood cell count and bacteria in his urine. He ordered Levaquin, a much, much stronger antibiotic, and then said, if you experience any flank pain, which probably referring to the kidney stones, come back. And he did. He came back about a month later complaining of right flank pain, at which point Dr. Kaira sent him to an outside urologist. Now, it should be noted that the outside urologist, his first impression of this was, he saw the test results with bacteria levels high, with white blood cell counts elevated. He saw and diagnosed this is a matter of kidney stones. Now, he performed other tests. He found, ultimately, that he was suffering from bladder cancer. One thing that surprises me is that no one has ever mentioned the possibility that he may have been suffering a urinary tract infection on top of bladder cancer. Does bladder cancer cause elevated levels of bacteria in your urine? In other words, what I'm getting at is that Dr. Kaira may have come up with a proper diagnosis. It was simply an incomplete diagnosis. Now, We talked about the in the briefs, the Greeno and Sherrod cases. These cases differ significantly for one primary reason. In both cases, we have somebody at the very outset putting a note in there saying, this looks like a peptic ulcer, somebody ought to look into this. And nobody ever did. In Sherrod, this looks exactly like, they identified the condition immediately, and nobody bothered to look into it. Dr. Caiera based his treatment plan on a reasoned set of circumstances. He looked at the evidence that he had before him. He saw bacteria and elevated white blood cell counts. He treated it accordingly. Now, what we need to do to bring this case within the realm of the Eighth Amendment is show that his treatment was so blatantly inappropriate as to evidence intentional mistreatment. Quite frankly, I do not see that in this case whatsoever. We're looking for conduct that approaches criminal recklessness. What I see is a misdiagnosis at best. And quite frankly, I think that his diagnosis may have been partly correct. Now, the fact that he did not perform all of the tests, does that render that make this criminal recklessness? I'm afraid I just can't go that far. I think Dr. Caiera did a tremendous job under the circumstances. I see I'm going into my co-counsel's time, and I would ask this court to urge you to affirm the district court's opinion.
Thank you, Mr. Honor. Mr. Hagel?
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Jim Hagel, and I represent Dr. Ahmad. Dr. Ahmad saw the inmate on five occasions. On each of these occasions, he attempted to treat what was presented to him. The district court correctly pointed this out, that there was an attempt at treatment at each visit. While one may disagree with the diagnosis, one may disagree with the treatment, that is something that would come within a medical negligence case, not a case for deliberate indifference in violation of constitutional rights. I would respectfully disagree with plaintiff's counsel that there were complaints of blood in the urine at each visit with Dr. Ahmad. The record will show that of these five visits, there were only complaints of blood at two visits. At the first visit on August 24, 1999, Dr. Ahmad responded by making the referral to the urologist. And as your honors have already pointed out in your questioning, Dr. Ahmad recently relied that the plaintiff had seen this urologist and, in fact, was told by the plaintiff himself in the January 18, 2000 visit that he had been recently seen by the urologist and that his prostate was okay. So Dr. Ahmad was under the assumption that he made the referral for this blood urine, and that the plaintiff was continuing to see a urologist for this, not until January. It was not dispelled in January. Rather, it was only after the last visit of February 18, 2000, when Dr. Ahmad states in his deposition and in his records that I need to get those records and look at it, and for the first time he learns that the plaintiff had not seen the urologist, but had seen the PA at Christie Clinic. And then what did he do? Did he intentionally disregard this, how he had been misled? No. He orders an IVP, which is a test that a doctor, like Dr. Ahmad, an internist, would order to make further inquiry into the complaints of gross hematuria that occurred at the last visit. Because you got to look at this from Dr. Ahmad's perspective. He sees it at the first visit. There's three intervening visits and absolutely no complaints by the plaintiff about blood in his urine. Sees him the last visit, February 18, 2000, and there is a complaint. So he says, I better get those records and look at it. And then he does. He learns after the visit that he, the plaintiff hadn't seen the urologist, and then orders the IVP. And as your honors have pointed out, the plaintiff leaves Champaign County Jail in May, and Dr. Ahmad testified that he left in April. Whether or not, even if we assume that he was there till May, it doesn't matter why the IVP even came back clean. So Dr. Ahmad responded to what was presented to him at all times and rendered treatment. It is not deliberate indifference. And as Your Honor has pointed out already, this isn't a medical negligence case. What the plaintiff is pointing out is, well, maybe he didn't make the right diagnosis. Maybe he didn't order the right test. That doesn't rise to the level of a constitutional deprivation. I would ask this court to affirm the district court's granting of summary judgment in favor of Dr. Ahmad. Thank you very much.
Your Honors, the magistrate judge sitting in this case issued a report and recommendation saying that summary judgment was inappropriate on Dr. Kaira's motion because a reasonable jury could look at the facts and determine that Dr. Kaira knew of cancer from the very first day and deliberately ignored that risk of cancer by repeatedly running the same tests that Mr. Duckworth's expert has critiqued in his affidavits and reports as showing not showing signs of infection and instead showing increasing hematuria within the patient. And the magistrate judge recommended that summary judgment be denied for those very reasons, because a jury, when looking at those same facts, as discussed in the briefs, could reach the same conclusion that the magistrate judge did, that there could be evidence that there was deliberate indifference on the part of Dr. Kaira. For those reasons, this is a question for a jury to determine on Dr. Kaira rather than for summary judgment. And with regard to Dr. Ahmad, there's no indication to dispute the evidence of Dr. Ahmad's mindset that he would let Mr. Duckworth get his care when he got to where he was going. And for poor Mr. Duckworth, he never got that care. Instead, Dr. Ahmad showed repeatedly in his notes and the notes of other records in the case that he would not care for him. For those reasons, we ask that the orders granting summary judgment be reversed.
Thank you, Mr. Kilpatrick. Thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement.